morning.
All right. Hey, thank you.
And we're going to turn now to NPR's Wade Goodwin, who is in Dallas. And Wade, just get us up to speed. What do we know at this hour?
Well, I think the investigation is ongoing. We have 5 police officers dead. Apparently now 12 were shot, and we have 2 civilians who were also wounded. That's the latest from the mayor of the city. And, you know, it was an ambush. It was a peaceful, it was not an angry protest, really. There were even times when protesters mingled with the cops in a friendly way. Huh. It was almost over, and then suddenly snipers, at least 2 snipers, opened up, targeting the police, and chaos broke loose.
I want to bring in a couple other voices into the conversation. NPR's Martin Costi, who covers law enforcement, and White House correspondent Scott Horsley. But first, Martin, we just heard Wade describe how this was a peaceful demonstration, and actually at some points police were taking selfies with protesters. Can you take us back and talk about how police, after Ferguson in particular, have really tried to reevaluate how they do their jobs, how they are interacting with communities, and some of the tangible steps they've taken?
In fact, I should point out here that if somebody was trying to punish police for bad policing or send a message, boy, did they pick the wrong department, because the Dallas Police Department is actually quite respected among reformers for the work they've done the last couple of years.
Why? What have they done?
They have been far more open with data about things they do, about police-involved shootings, than other departments. They've embraced that sort of that ethic. Complaints against the police department have dropped precipitously. Uh-huh. And in fact, the murder rate is now dropping. A lot of people point to Dallas police as a success story. So not exactly the right target for some kind of twisted demonstration of anger against policing in America, I think. But more broadly speaking, nationally, I think, this is a decentralized police system we have in this country. Depending on how you count them, 17 to 18,000 different agencies. Constitutionally, there is no federal control over these agencies. They're state and local, and so change happens from the ground up. The White House had a task force on 21st century policing, tried to push all these departments in certain directions, but this amounts to suggestions. It amounts to best practices. It is like herding cats, and there are some departments that have really tried hard. There are others that have sort of, especially smaller departments that don't really get noticed on a day-to-day basis, that maybe haven't been doing as much. It varies so much, but I would say that in the last couple of years, police departments have become far more aware of public scrutiny, but at the same time, they're also a bit, they're puzzled because, frankly, standards for police are higher now than they were a generation ago. They train more than they used to, and yet there's a public sense that policing is worse than it was a generation ago. And the key factor there, I think, is we're noticing it more. We're having cell phone videos of what happens.
So, Wade, does that jibe with what you know about the Dallas Police Department and the reforms it's made?
Yes. I mean, the Dallas Police Department, I think, is one of the leaders in the country in trying to reform the way it does policing. It's focused on community policing. It has a black police chief. And it is not a police department that has been afraid to look at itself critically. And I think you saw that some of the reaction to that last night. This was not a police department that's feels like it's at war with its own black community.
Hmm. I want to bring in Scott Horsley into the conversation. Scott, the president has been put in this strange situation. He's in Poland right now for the NATO summit, historic summit. They've got a huge agenda: Afghanistan, terrorism, migration in Europe, Brexit, to say the least. But remarkably, he has been pulled back to domestic affairs, having to make 2 statements already in the course of 12 hours about this violence. Can you tell us what he said?
That's right, Rachel. The White House was very much aware of the widespread public frustration sparked by these back-to-back police killings. And as Martin suggests, they were amplified by those viral videos. So the president had hardly arrived in Warsaw last evening when he stepped in front of the microphones to say, look, these are not isolated incidents. They are symptomatic of racial inequities in law enforcement and criminal justice that all Americans should be troubled by. Now, this is a politically fraught area for the president because when he's made statements like this in the past in regards to the shooting of Michael Brown or Eric Garner or the death of Freddie Gray, he has sometimes drawn criticism that he's not sufficiently supportive of law enforcement. Mm. So last night he went out of his way to say, we have extraordinary appreciation for police officers. It's a tough job. And he said, they have a right to go home to their families just like anybody else on the job. And the president expressed hope that these incidents would not drive Americans into sort of their bunkers or their partisan camps. And obviously what we've seen in Dallas is it just heightens that concern.
I mean, this is a personal issue for the president. He's had to make speeches, remarks, give condolences about issues related to gun violence in this country and the state of race relations for a long time now. How do you see this fitting into his priorities in the last few months of his administration?
Well, he has certainly made criminal justice reform a priority in the waning year of his administration, and he had some hope that because there was bipartisan support for that in Congress, this might be one of the few areas where he could make common cause with the Republican-controlled House and Senate. He said last night that that effort has lost momentum because Capitol Hill is sort of where momentum goes to die. But he certainly does have hope that there can be some progress made on this. And this is one of those causes that he has talked about pursuing after he leaves office as well. He said yesterday that these problems won't be solved during necessarily his lifetime or even his children's lifetime, that this is a long-term issue for him to deal with.
Martin, you have spent a long time reporting on the technology that is informing so much of this conversation right now, because this wouldn't be happening. Frankly, this conversation wouldn't be happening if we didn't have the preponderance of cell phone technology. Can you talk a little bit about that and how police departments are grappling with it?
Yes, I think it was 2 days ago in Baton Rouge when protesters were gathering over the death of Alton Sterling, when a couple of the community leaders there, protesters, stood up and started thanking Apple and Google and Microsoft by name. There's a sense that that if these things weren't captured up close and personal on video, that they would be lumped together into some kind of anonymous statistic, you know, blackmail, shot, encounter with police, traffic stop, no one really knows what happens. That's the sense that a lot of activists have, that now that era is over, that things are now seeing the light of video or the light of day through video. And that, you know, police in the last few years, I think, have come around to accepting that new reality. At first, about maybe 5 years ago, I still remember a lot more of those videos had moments when a frustrated officer or an angry officer you'd see his hand reaching for the camera and the camera would, you know, the recording would stop. Police officers now are being told unambiguously by most departments, you can't interfere with people videotaping as long as they're not getting in the way of law enforcement's work. Hmm. You know, and that's now part of every officer's training, ideally, and I think in most cases it is. I mean, they understand that now, and they sort of grin and bear it. Some of them have embraced it even. I mean, they're wearing their own cameras too. There's a sense now that the camera is an integral part of every law enforcement encounter, both the civilian's version as well as the officer's version, and that's just the new reality.
And it stirs up public sentiment in such an emotional way, Wade. I mean, these protests that were held in Dallas last night were in response to these two killings involving police over the course of the past few days. One of them in particular, Philando Castile, a man in Falcon Heights outside of St. Paul in Minnesota. His girlfriend recorded this horrific scene on her phone and then posted it to Facebook. It's an emotional scene. It's hard to watch. How many people you have spoken with in Dallas were citing that video as a reason that they felt compelled to go out on the streets and take part in this protest?
Well, I think the two videos are a part of the larger whole that we've all been witness to over the last couple of years that's been building. And I think black people in Dallas and around the country have gotten to the point where it's just too much to take. And, you know, last night was just devastating for the city of Dallas. You know, it's taken us 50 years to get over the charge that we are the city of hate after the Kennedy assassination. And there were some strange similarities. I mean, this shooting happened about two blocks away from where the president was killed. Lee Harvey Oswald knew the parade route and picked an elevated position from which to attack. Police now believe that these snipers knew the protest route, and they took an elevated position from which to attack. And both of these attacks, you know, just had were to devastating effect. And I can tell you right now that you know, the city of Dallas is stunned and in deep mourning about what has happened to them, and again, out of nowhere.
Just to summarize, we are following the events in Dallas this morning. Five police officers were killed, another at least seven wounded by snipers who attacked what had been peaceful demonstrations held on the streets of Dallas last night. Those protests coming in response to two killings, two African-American men who were killed during altercations with police over the past few days. President Obama is in Warsaw, Poland today. He is there for an historic NATO summit. Heads of state are gathering to take on a whole host of issues ranging from the ongoing war in Afghanistan and the NATO effort there, also migration in Europe, and of course the UK's vote to leave the European Union. However, he has been forced, because of what has happened in Dallas, to make remarks about the violence. He's condemned the violence. We are also expecting the president to come out again and speak about what has happened. We are waiting for that press conference. He'll be giving a joint presser with the Polish president. They will be coming out together. In the meantime, I am joined by Wade Goodwin, who's reporting on the ground from Dallas. We've also got Martin Kosty on the line with us, national correspondent who covers law enforcement and policing issues, and NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, if you don't mind reminding us what is supposed to be happening in this NATO summit. I ticked off some of the issues, but talk about what has brought the president there in the first place.
Well, this is his fifth and final NATO summit, possibly his last trip to Europe as president, and it comes at a time when, of course, that continent is feeling a lot of different strains. There was the vote 2 weeks ago of the UK to divorce the European Union. That is a major pull. The president, of course, had lobbied for Britons to vote the other way. At the same time, he stressed that the UK remains an important partner in NATO, and he'll be emphasizing that during these talks. NATO has an important role to play in Afghanistan. He's asking other NATO allies to up their contributions to the effort in Afghanistan, and he set the table for that this week by announcing that he's slowing the drawdown of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Instead of cutting back to 5,500 U.S. troops next year as planned, he's planning to leave 8,400 U.S. troops in Afghanistan, at least through the end of his term. NATO also has concerns to the southeast, on its southeastern flank, with all the fallout from the Syrian civil war, and to the east because of a newly aggressive Russia. And so NATO is deploying four new battalions on its eastern flank to guard against any further Russian aggression. One of those battalions will be made up of U.S. forces, the other from other NATO allies. So, you know, there's been concern, we've heard this in the presidential campaign, about other NATO allies not necessarily, you know, carrying their weight in the alliance, so that's something they'll be talking about. And then, of course, the EU Brexit vote just sort of hangs over this meeting. So lots going on in addition to keeping a weather eye on what's happening back home.
And we are waiting for the president to come out and make remarks in a joint press conference with the Polish president. But in the meantime, I'm going to turn back to Wade Goodwin, who is in Dallas. And Wade, you know, the city was on lockdown, essentially, as all this was unfolding in the early morning hours. People in Dallas are now waking up to this news. What is the mood as you've been monitoring reports and talking with people? How are people feeling this morning?
Well, I think people are shocked. First, and so sad about, you know, this senseless slaughter of these innocent police officers who were, you know what they were doing? They were guarding this protest march to make sure that everything went well. And it did go well, all the way up until these snipers started to try to kill them. And there was a standoff with one of the snipers for much of the morning. That standoff has ended with the suspect dead, we have. There's so many questions about, what the motive was, yeah. And but a good chunk of the downtown is going to be closed. People are going to have to figure out how to get around. Mm. There's logistical issues, and as well as just. The emotional issues, I think, are going to take a long time to get over.
Martin, what does something like this do to the perception among law enforcement around the country of being on the attack, of being targeted in this way, of the so-called kind of war on cops?
The war on cops is an incredibly sensitive and very politically fraught phrase, and it's really become a theme among some police groups in the last couple of years. And when you look at it in terms of statistics, in terms of police dying on duty, there isn't really a war on cops, at least not compared with a generation ago. I mean, police die on duty less than they used to, depending how you count it, half the rate they did back in 1980, say. On the other hand, there is an undeniable sense among many police that for the last few years, there's been a steady erosion of the traditional respect that Americans have had for police officers, and then that is dangerous in their minds. Mm. You may recall, I used to be a foreign correspondent. I used to work in Latin America, and it was a very different reality in places like Brazil, where police officers wouldn't even hang their uniforms out to dry in their backyard lest their neighbors find out they were cops. Because and when a police officer was killed, there'd hardly be any kind of public notice. It was almost a sense of good riddance. That wasn't true in the United States traditionally. Obviously, police officers have often done things that have made people angry, but there was this general sense, when a police officer was killed on duty, that there would be a sense of mourning and respect for that. And police officers worry that that's going away. Rightly or wrongly, they worry about that. And they worry that that will lead to greater danger for them, more possibility of ambush when people who are extremists or unbalanced are inspired to attack them. And even though the number of ambushes is actually very small compared to other dangers for police officers, it preys on their minds. It's an ever-present thought. You talk to officers and they recall the two New York police officers who were killed at the end of 2014 who were ambushed in their car. Their names are always on their minds. And now I'm assuming the names of these Dallas officers will also kind of join that roll call for them. So there's this sense of changing, sort of a changing place in society in America, and it really disturbs them.
We hear about this trust gap between police and the communities they serve, but there also seems to be just conflicting messages. Because on the one hand, you hear about police officers saying, listen, we end up having these altercations because we are patrolling these communities where there's a lot of crime. And that's why there's this disproportionate number of incidents with African Americans or other minorities. And then you talk to people who live in these communities and they say, wait, that's not our reality. We call the cops and they don't show up, which is why, perhaps people feel that they have to arm themselves. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that trust gap and what seems to be this mismatch of information?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, as we were saying before, has been fed in the last few years by a greater awareness of what's going on because, video is so striking. People see these incidents and it becomes real as opposed to just an abstraction. And so there is a sense that, when police officers do the wrong thing, when they kill someone, when they abuse someone's rights, that's more present somehow, and it seems like it's happening more often. Scholars of this say, well, probably not. It's probably at least same as it ever was, and maybe even slightly better now than it was a generation ago. But that doesn't really, that's cold comfort for someone who's 20 years old growing up in a neighborhood where there's a sense of a breakdown of that of that relationship between community and the people policing the community. So, you know, we have to deal with what we have today, not, you know, the history. And even though officers, police officers will say, you know, if things have gotten better, training is better, we don't understand why everyone's so angry at us right now. You know, for a young person, that's irrelevant. Right now, people have been killed on video, and these are egregious looking incidents.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that President Obama said after the death of Freddie Gray is these things are not new. We shouldn't pretend that they're new, but in some ways they have now been exposed to a broader community than the African-American community, where they were perhaps well known. The president certainly talked about addressing that trust gap between police and the communities that they're intended to serve, and he's argued that this is not an either or, that rebuilding that trust is not only good for the community but good for the police, makes their jobs easier, makes them safer, makes it more likely they go home at the end of the shift safe.
Wade, what have you seen in the community there in Dallas in terms of the relationship with law enforcement?
Well, there was an incident last night that kind of speaks to what we're talking about right now. A 7-Eleven that was a couple of blocks away from the shooting, one of the sniper's bullets shattered its plate glass, which says just how far these snipers were able to reach. And after things had calmed down, that empty plate glass was too much temptation for some of the folks who were still trapped in downtown, and they began to go in and steal the beer and wine out of there. Well, very quickly, about 30 to 40 cops gathered around the 7-Eleven and stood shoulder to shoulder and stopped any more looting, which didn't go well with the potential looters, I guess, who were hanging around. And so they began to taunt the police, dance in front of them, singing and taunt them about their fallen colleagues. And, you know, on the one hand, you kind of think to yourself, well, I guess there's no shortage of people who will act like horses patoots. But on the other hand, it also speaks to the fact just how deep the alienation can be between the black community and the police department. I mean, on one hand, they were kind of saying, welcome to our world, and we're going to celebrate the fact that this time it's the men in blue who are lying dead on the street. Mm-hmm. And I just felt the whole set, that whole scene was such a stark and sad, I felt, comment about where we're at in this country.
Martin, can you talk a little bit about how the Black Lives Matter movement has evolved? I mean, we should just remind listeners that the violence that we saw was in response, or happened rather, during demonstrations that came in response to these two killings of African Americans this week. This was in connection to the Black Lives Matter movement. How has that group evolved since Ferguson and its relationship with law enforcement?
Yeah, and obviously, and I think everyone here understands that, you know, we know nothing of the actual motives of these people who attacked Dallas police, and much needs to be answered there. But obviously, the context for this is this anger at police that African Americans have been expressing, you know, a lot more visibly in the last couple of years. I mean, Ferguson is sort of seen as this watershed moment, but, you know, it was always there. Somehow it came together at the summer of 2014. You know, there was the death of Eric Garner in New York. There was Ferguson. That combined with the, you know, rising tide of videos, it sort of just hit a critical mass at that moment. But it's, you know, not a new sentiment, especially among minority communities in the United States.
And I'm going to interrupt you there, Martin, yes. Because now officials in Dallas are holding a press conference. We'll go to that live.
And their calm determination to make our city safe and to arrest anybody that did us harm. I also want to thank the county, Judge Jenkins. I want to thank the FBI. I want to thank the governor. Lieutenant Governor flew in last night. The president called me from Poland. And all your commentators have wished us well and are praying for us. And I want to say from our heart, we feel that. And so thank you. I am now going to tell you some not good news for you reporters, and that is we've got a criminal investigation going on, and our number one job is to make sure the citizens of Dallas are safe, so we're not going to tell you anything about the suspects, and we're not going to answer any questions on that. We will when it's the right time. Now is not the right time. But a lot has happened in the last 5 or 6, 7 hours since we talked. I guess it was early in the morning. And I want Chief Brown to give you an update on that. I'm proud of him. He's been working so hard these last few hours. We've been with families, and we've been trying to make sure that the city is safe this morning, and I believe it is. Chief Brown.
Thank you, Mayor.
We're hurting. Our profession is hurting. Dallas officers are hurting. We are heartbroken. There are no words to describe the atrocity that occurred to our city. All I know is that this must stop, this divisiveness between our police and our citizens. To update you on what's transpired since we last spoke, let me walk through the standoff that had occurred, or that was occurring at El Centro on the second floor, the college there in downtown Dallas. We cornered one suspect, and we tried to negotiate for several hours. Negotiations broke down. We had an exchange of gunfire with the suspect. We saw no other option but to use our bomb robot and place a device on its extension for it to detonate where the suspect was. Other options would have exposed our officers to grave danger. The suspect is deceased as a result of detonating the bomb. The reporting that the suspect killed himself is not accurate. We've confirmed that he's been deceased because of the detonation of the bomb. Our hostage negotiator did an exceptional job getting this suspect to talk before he died, during the hours of negotiating that eventually broke down. And I want to share with you some of the comments from this suspect. The suspect said he was upset about Black Lives Matter. He said he was upset about the recent police shootings. The suspect said he was upset at white people. The suspect stated he wanted to kill white people, especially white officers. The suspect stated we will eventually find the IEDs. The suspect stated he was not affiliated with any groups, and he stated that he did this alone. The suspect said other things that are part of this investigation so that we can make sure that everyone associated with this tragic event is brought to justice. So as the mayor said, we won't expand on any further on what other suspects we have interviewed or looked at or their status until we get further into this investigation and get closer to a conclusion of what and who are all involved. But let me just say just some closing comments about Dallas police officers and Dart police officers. Some of the bravest men and women you'd ever want to be associated with. You see video footage after video footage of them running toward gunfire from an elevated position with no chance to protect themselves and to put themselves in harm's way to make sure citizens can get to a place of security. So please join me in applauding these brave men and women who do this job under great scrutiny, under great vulnerability, who literally risk their lives to protect our democracy. We don't feel much support most days. Let's not make today most days. Please, we need your support to be able to protect you from men like these who carried out this tragic, tragic event. Pray for these families. I spoke with the families of the deceased and the injured. They are not having a good time trying to deal, absorb this, trying to understand why. And they need your prayers. So please join us in helping us comfort the grieving officers' families. And I trust that soon, because we're working very diligently in processing the crime scene, finding to find evidence to bring any other suspects to justice that were a part of this. But please pray for our strength through this trying time. Thank you.
I want to add that there are public safety officials that protect our cities and our institutions all across America every day that aren't police officers. And we lost one of those last night. A DART officer was one of the victims. And I want to just take a moment and say the professionalism of the DART organization was great. And I appreciate better school police officers, campus college police officers, standing shoulder to shoulder with our police officers. And that's the way we work. Now, Chief Brown told the victims' families last night and the police officers that he was a man of faith, and I'm a man of faith too, and that we need prayers, and prayer is good. So today at 12 o'clock at Thanksgiving Square, a leadership group of interfaith ministers will be leading us in that prayer. I would ask that if you're at your home or at your office or at your school, to join us today at noon in that spirit of prayer, to bring our city together and our country together, to heal wounds, not create them. Thank you. Any questions that were not off limit? Yeah.
The injured officers have, most of them have been released. There are some that will need follow-up. I'm not going to go into the detail of what types of injuries. Their families are being very private for obvious reasons right now. But again, excuse me. What's the question? I'm sorry.
Critical.
Yes, they're doing better. Some have been released. Some of their statuses, they're still needing more treatment, but they're being very private about any further details about their health. So we have to be right 100% of the time in the way we police this city. Suspects like this have to be right once. They don't have to work very hard to do cowardly acts like this, to snipe at our officers from elevated positions and to ambush them from secreted positions around corners. All that hard work is not for naught. This city has shown great support for this police department. This mayor and council and city manager's office have supported this department and these officers, and we expect that to continue. And this community, I'm born and raised here. Dallas is a great city. Our officers will continue to put themselves in harm's way to protect these great citizens. It's worthwhile.
I want to brag just for a second if anybody hasn't heard us say this. This police department trained in de-escalation far before cities across America did it. We are one of the premier community policing cities in the country. And this year, we have the fewest police officer-related shootings than any large city in America. So we are working hard to improve, and there's always room for improvement, but we are best in class, we feel.
Well said. Still talking to people, suspects, for the people in Dallas watching at home, are you confident that the threat is now over?
No, I'm not going to be satisfied until we've turned over every stone. We've got some level that this one suspect did do some of the shooting, but we're not satisfied that we've exhausted every lead. And we're not going to be satisfied till every lead is exhausted. So if there's someone out there that was associated with this, we will find you, and we will prosecute you, and we will bring you to justice.
As of right now, it's a total of 4 suspects?
We're not counting or expanding on who or how many. We're going to keep these suspects guessing.
Well, I'm going to let Chief Brown make any strategic decisions. But I think it's important for citizens to realize that we want to give everybody their freedom of speech. We've been through several protests in the last 5 or 6 years, and they've all gone in a safe manner. But the chief makes decisions at times that people could be critical of. Do you escalate it too much? Do you put too much body armor on? If we're all being critical of those things, just think about today. This is what you're risking if you don't do it right. And so from a policy standpoint, we believe in the right to protest peacefully, and these were peaceful protests till this happened. But we also have to believe in keeping our police officers safe. And I know I'm going to redouble my efforts on that.
Again, I just want to expand on the mayor's comments. Police officers are guardians of this great democracy, the freedom to protest, the freedom of speech, the freedom for expression. All freedoms we fight for with our lives. It's what makes us who we are as Americans. And so we risk our lives for those rights. And so we won't militarize our policing standards, but we will do it in a much safer way every time, like we chose to do it this time. We had an adequate amount of officers at this scene, and we were blocking traffic and doing all the things to protect people's right to protest and their free speech. We are not going to let a coward who would ambush police officers change our democracy. We're not going to do it. Our city, our country, is better than that. All of those questions would just be speculation to answer. We can't get into the head of a person that would do something like this. We negotiated with this person. They seemed lucid during the negotiation. He wanted to kill officers. And he expressed killing white people. He expressed killing white officers. He expressed anger for Black Lives Matter. None of that makes sense. None of that is a reason, a legitimate reason, to do harm to anyone.
This is David Brown, the police chief of Dallas, and
the rest of it would just be speculating on what his motivations were. We just know what he said. That's what he said to our negotiators.
Hey guys, thank you. We still have a lot of work to do. We're gonna take off.
And you have been listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm David Green, listening there to the mayor of Dallas, Mike Rawlings, and also the police chief, David Brown. And wow, Rachel, I mean, it was just chilling. You really got a sense from the police chief how painful this has been. He said, we are hurting. Our profession is hurting. We must stop this divisiveness between our police and our citizens. And he spoke, you know, the new information we have now, you know, the police were approaching this one suspect and tried to negotiate with him. Got, you know, from him, described as lucid, sort of what he was thinking. He told police that he was upset about recent police shootings, as we've seen this week, upset at white people, wanted to kill white people, especially white officers. And the police decided they could not approach him because they would be in danger and decided to detonate a bomb, which killed him. So that's just some of the drama this morning and some of the pain that is clearly being felt in this city.
Yeah, Chief Brown clearly trying to establish that that they had no way out, that this guy was a threat, that they had gone through hours of negotiations with him and those had come to a standstill, and they felt, in the police chief's words, that they had no alternative but to send in what sounds like a robotic explosive device that they had to detonate, and then that suspect was killed in that. We are joined by a few different voices to give context to what we've been talking about. NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley, Martin Costi, who covers law enforcement, and Wade Goodwin in Dallas. Pretty remarkable press conference, Martin. I'm going to turn to you. What did you hear out of that struck you?
Well, as you point out, that opening statement of the fact that they are in pain as a profession, I think that echoes what we were talking about before the press conference started, the sense that many police officers have in this country right now of being being sort of under siege in terms of people's attitude towards them, you know, whether or not, you know, whatever you may think of the professionalism of police in your particular community, there's a sense across the board among many police officers, even very reform-minded officers that I talk to on a regular basis, that they're all being tarred with the same brush. That you'll have someone do something horrible, captured on videotape, and that all officers are then lumped together, and then they have to worry about their safety doing their jobs in their communities. And, you know, as they pointed out, Dallas has a good reputation as a department. It's very community policing minded. It's definitely interested in improving the way it does its work. And so they feel especially, I think, right now, unfairly targeted by whatever this person had in mind. And as a side note, that technique of the robotic
device
yeah. with a bomb on it, I have never heard of anything like that in policing. That is astonishing.
I want to bring in another voice into the conversation. Sarah Mervosh is a reporter with the Dallas Morning News, and she joins us on the line. Sarah, we should point out, in that press conference, the police chief made a point of establishing that this suspect had no connection to any groups, that he was acting on his own, correct?
Right. And that sort of jives with what I heard last night from marchers and protesters when I was out on the streets. They were saying that the protest was peaceful. There were police officers who were taking photos with peaceful protesters. And there was actually an incident where one man was arrested who was a protester. And they were saying, that can't be the shooter. He was with us the whole time.
What did you hear out of those remarks from those two city leaders? We saw the mayor there. We heard the mayor and the police chief. Clearly, this is a city, in their words, that is heartbroken right now.
Right. I heard, heartbreak and anger, especially from Dallas Police Chief David Brown. Just a year ago, he had to defend our Dallas Police headquarters when it was attacked. Shots were fired at Dallas Police headquarters, and miraculously, no one was hurt. And this time, it's a totally different scenario. And so he's really asking for the support of the city. He's saying on most days they don't feel support, and he hopes that today won't be most days.
Yeah. Sarah Mervosh, reporter with the Dallas Morning News, giving us the view from there of these tragic events. Thank you so much. We've also heard from NPR correspondent Scott Horsley, Martin Costi, Wade Goodwin. You have been listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm David Green.